This is the MagicWordPodcast.com.
Welcome back to our month of boo. This is Scott Wells for the MagicWordPodcast.com. Only a couple more weeks of that, huh? Okay, this is just for me. I'm laughing at myself. So this week, we're going to be continuing our third week of the month of Boo, and we're going to be featuring Paul Prater, who is a person who I would say a bizarrist, kind of does some dark magic. He's created his own products and everything, but he also does ghost walks in his town of Argenta, Arkansas, which is just a little bit outside of Little Rock, Arkansas, and explains about how you can perhaps do this in your own hometown or nearby location also. A little bit late right now to get started on this, perhaps, but perhaps better late than never, or to be ready for next year at least, so you can start being on the lookout for where that you can perhaps to do a ghost tour in your own hometown. But this week, I want to again thank the Friends of the Magic Word for helping to support this podcast. And also, I want to thank Ian Kendall, who had donated these great prizes that we're going to be awarding here this week. He had, when we were at Genie Convention just a couple weeks ago, he had given a workshop, a daily morning breakfast workshop. And he had done this a few years ago also. And so he had some lecture notes from that, and he has some lecture notes from this one. There were some hard copies, but he had these available in PDF. And so he graciously had agreed to give us 6 copies of each that we can award as prizes to randomly drawn registrants whose names I have now drawn. And in fact, I will announce those winners at the end of this podcast. So stay tuned and see who it was that won. Or if you were one of the winners, I mean, golly, there's 12 people, and that's quite a few. Typically, we only have 1 or 2 or 3 prizes that are available. So your odds were a lot better this time than in usual contests. So again, this week, we're going to be talking with Paul Prater. I know that you're going to enjoy this, so please welcome my guest this week on our third week in the month of Boo, Mr. Paul Prater, here on The Magic Word. This is Scott Wells for the Magic Word Podcast.com. Well, this podcast is being recorded in the summer, but this will be released sometime closer to the Halloween season. And I usually like to have something that's going to have, I should say, a conversation or a podcast episode. It's going to have something to do with the Hallowed evening that we all celebrate around the world, as known as Halloween. And also leading up to that, that there are a lot of things that magicians and mentalists and bizarrists and storytellers and other people can prepare themselves to do, and in order to entertain and fool and maybe scare some people. And the best way of doing that, of course, is with certain props, and those kinds of things are available online from different proprietors around the world. And some years ago, I was attending the Mindvention in Las Vegas and had the distinct privilege of getting to become good friends with my guest today, someone who at the time was affiliated with a law firm and now has his own law practice. But that's kind of a very small part of what that he does, because of the other stuff that he is doing, where he is performing and traveling around the country, around the world for that matter, and lecturing, as well as making his own bizarre type props that are available through his website. And they're proprietary types of things that he doesn't really sell to through other companies like Murphy's, and you won't see this anywhere except whenever that you happen to see him lecture. And these kinds of things are really cool, and they look like authentic types of old props and things like that. Well, we'll get into all that. I'm really getting ahead of myself. Please welcome my guest today, Mr. Paul Prater. Hi there, Paul.
Hey, thank you for having me, Scott. I appreciate it.
You're welcome. So glad that you're here then today. And you're actually kind of traveling about, and not necessarily on a lecture tour, but you're in town on some other business and performance, and then also going to be lecturing later this evening.
Right. I've got a good friend in Dallas who moved here about 2.5 years ago, and we performed together doing variety shows.
Oh.
We had burlesque performers, and he's a juggler. Mm-hmm. And he called me, or I guess emailed. No, he called me. It doesn't matter what he did. He communicated with me about probably 4 months ago or so, and he's like, hey, can you come down here in July? And I said, yeah, most likely. Let me talk to another theater and talk to that club and see if we can get a lecture. And I got a lecture here in Houston, so it just worked. I had two shows, a lecture in Dallas, all within 2 days, and then got basically a day off, and now down here.
And then heading back to Arkansas after that.
Heading back to Arkansas after that. Yeah, yeah, I've got next week, I've got already shows booked. I'm booked through the rest of this month, actually through August, all the way through the end of August and into a good chunk of September.
Do you find that October, I mentioned that earlier about being a bazaar, kind of a thing around Halloween time. Are you more busy then? I mean, do you book yourself?
Yeah, then? But the funny thing is I don't do a whole lot of shows in October. I actually do ghost tours. I started my own ghost tour, and those have just blown up. And so I take all of October and just kind of block the calendar, and I run those 4 or often 5 days a week as it gets
in
closer.
Arkansas. It's Little Rock or whereabouts, right?
Yeah, it's actually North Little Rock, which is a different city. It's on the other side of the river. But we have an old downtown area called Argenta, and it's very walkable. It's very safe. It's very picturesque. Mm-hmm. And that's where the tour is. I was sitting on the back patio with a friend who owns a wine bar drinking wine, and we looked up at a window, and he said, you know, people have seen a ghost up there. And I thought, what? No. And I started asking other business owners, and I found out there were a lot of ghost stories. But I love the history, so I wanted to be able to tie all that in. And I went to there's an Argenta History Commission that's just the history of this. It's only like 6 blocks. Mm-hmm. But there's a history commission there, and I walked in dressed, I know our listeners can't see, but like I am now, basically, you know, some black ratty shorts and a heavy metal t-shirt, and didn't know how they would respond when I said, hey, I want to do a ghost tour. And they were like, awesome, what do you need?
And they were all down with that. Yeah.
And I told them everything, and they gave me all of the pictures I needed, all of the history,
knew all about this. I mean, when you walked in, this was all new to you, and you said, I'd like to find out some information and do this. And they said, here's some info on it. We know all about it.
Yes.
Wow.
And so they were
looking for you.
They were. They were. And of course, the city's been really happy because Argenta is still very much an up and coming neighborhood. It was an old neighborhood, and like a lot of them, it was really in bad shape in the 90s. Mm-hmm. And then in the probably mid 2000s, they started investing in it, and it's still really growing. So I'm bringing a lot of people, a lot of out of towners who are staying in Little Rock. I will bring them over to North Little Rock, and we have great art galleries and bars and restaurants down there. And so the city loves it. The business owners love it. I work closely with them and often bring people into their bar for parts of the tour. When we do Wednesday, Thursday nights, I do what I call booze and brews. And when we do a little seance work and a little, I call it psychic test. It's mentalism for, you know, our listeners.
Yeah.
But we go into two different bars. So, you know, the bar owners love it too. I told them all I need is 15 to 20 minutes, and I'm going to bring 25 people in, and you're going to turn, you know, at least 25 drinks in 15 minutes.
Right.
So they're real happy about it.
So they're obviously anticipating that, and they would reserve tables for you and everything then too. Do you get something out of that?
The goodwill of the business owners? No, I don't really get anything out of it.
All right.
Both of them have become friends of mine. The guy who owns the wine bar, I was friends with before I ever started the ghost tour. And I get invites to his lake house.
Yeah. Well, that's nice. Well, you know, golly, it's an interesting direction. I'm glad we're going this way. Several years ago, I've gone on several ghost tours in different cities in London. I went on the Jack the Ripper tour. Mm-hmm. And that was really kind of cool because they, just as you had said, gone through a couple of bars, and they said, well, supposedly a ghost had been over here, or they said there's something in the bathroom if you go in there. And so likewise, that they were kind of encouraging you to, in fact, I think they even had food set up for us. So it's part of the thing. You pay X dollars, and then you get, food. Of course, you got to buy a drink while you're there to eat along with your food. Likewise, in New Orleans, went on another ghost tour through there, and we went into different bars, and they obviously give you enough time that to have a drink, and it's a long enough tour that you kind of get hot and thirsty, and so you do want to stop along the way. So it's really a good idea that you can kind of pair up, I guess, with these establishments along the way.
Yeah, and since I started doing that, I've been on all of the media the news, the radio, the newspapers, all of that. It just has blown up. But also, other businesses have now started reaching out to me going, hey, how can we be a part of this?
Oh, and get on the tour also.
Right. They want us to stop in.
Now, that's another thing that you perhaps can, like you were saying, the bourbon tour, whatever, that you might have some other kind of a tour that would have a different angle to it.
Right.
And take them through. I mean, there'd be a reason for going to their restaurant then.
Right. Well, one of the places is the Elks Lodge, which is just a block off the tour. And the interesting thing is it supposedly is haunted and has a Bible that's in the Guinness Book of World Records because the building burned down twice and the Bible's not even singed.
Holy moly.
Yeah.
I mean, literally, holy moly.
But what I ended up doing with them, I didn't know. I can't add too many stops where we're going into places on the tour,
sure,
or you end up with a 4-hour long and,
sure,
you know, it doesn't work. But on Halloween night this past year, there were horrible storms, like horrible. And of course, that is the biggest night for my tour.
Yeah.
So I just called the Elks Lodge and went, hey, can I do a show in the Elks Lodge?
Did you do a seance or did you do a...
What I did was kind of like the Booze and Brews tour. So I had all of the slides of the buildings and we talked about some of the history, but there was a large performance angle, including a seance piece.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And I just alerted everyone, if this isn't what you want, I can try to move your ticket. I think only two people did it. Everybody else showed up.
Yeah.
And then the Elks Lodge after that said, when can you come back? And I said, you want me back? And they went, yeah, we've had the best bar night we've had. And we don't know when. So yeah, people who come on ghost tours tend to be drinkers too. So
yeah, that's true. Well, you know, it's kind of funny. There is another podcast called, Booze and Bourbon, B-O-O-S, Booze and Bourbon, or Bourbon and Booze, something like that. And there are two ladies, and they talk about, you know, bourbon and tequila and whiskey and whatever else. And so they'll be sampling whatever. And then the other half of the podcast will be them talking about, you know, some insane asylum or some house that was, you know, so they actually travel to these places, or they'll talk with people who I guess are involved with that or own the property or whatever. So they do involve the kind of booze, B-O-O,
right,
to kind of scare you a little bit and let you know about this, and then also talk about it's a different kind of an angle.
Yeah.
When I mentioned going on the Jack the Ripper tour, this was interesting also. It wasn't just Jack the Ripper, although they'd taken us there. There were other kinds of things in which they'd taken us by Lovecraft's house, and they were saying, you know, sometimes you might see, you know, someone in the window, take a picture, and if you do, you let us know.
Oh, yeah.
And that kind of a thing. And we went to near where the Cutty Sark is. I see we went around to this one place where they had filmed the original Dracula movie. She pointed out a castle. It was really a bus tour, obviously. It was not a walking tour.
Right.
So you pay a little bit more money, but you drive a lot further and go to different places around there. My question is that, do you continue to follow one spirit, or do you say, okay, this spirit was in this house, and then you go to this bar, there was another spirit over here, or whatever?
Yeah, there are multiple ghost stories down there, and,
okay,
and the origin of the town itself, pretty simply, it started as a railroad town. Well, I guess I should back up a little bit. I won't cover the whole history, but the two main streets were the original Trail of Tears, and so they
explain the Trail of Tears.
Yeah, the Trail of Tears, the Indian Removal Act was passed in 1820, I believe it was, and that forced the removal of all the Native Americans from their native lands to Oklahoma. And Arkansas sits on the border of Oklahoma, so a lot of those natives from the southeast would pass through Arkansas, and the ferries were there at the river, and they would ferry the natives over. And so right along the river, which is where the tour starts, is they estimate that as many as 13,500 natives died in Arkansas, and a lot of them somewhere along that general area. So you have that, and then it was a railroad town, and you know, railroads in the 1800s weren't nice family guys looking to settle down. So basically every place down there was a brothel or a bar or a gambling hall or
right.
So yeah, there's lots of violence, lots of murders, lots of killings, lots of craziness and mayhem. So there's plenty of stories in just this little six block area. And one of the things I talk about is there was even a race riot where several black folks were shot. A guy was lynched who was innocent. There's some stories there.
Wow.
Yeah.
Are there any stories that you have expanded on or perhaps created?
Oh, yeah.
there you go.
in particular, I don't mind sharing this. The History Commission, which I mentioned earlier, provided me with a picture, and it looks like there is the devil or a little demon or something in the picture. It's really a compelling picture. And I searched everything I could through archives for something about the devil being in Argentina and found nothing. So, yeah, I made up a story that's tied in with actual history. Mm-hmm. There's a drugstore there, too, that's the longest continuously operating drugstore west of the Mississippi. It's still a drugstore. But up above, when the original druggist built it, up above was a boarding house, basically a brothel. And so I just tied in that story of one of the prostitutes being poisoned possibly by the other ladies, right, since they lived right above. But she claimed she had sold her soul to the devil to never have to be a prostitute. So, yeah, I made up that story. It seemed to fit.
Is that something also then that you do in your performance as far as the seance? You bring that lady back, or do you just talk about that in the context when you're in that building?
Yeah, the seance portion that I do is in a building that is, according to the legends and stories, the most haunted building in Argento. And it does have some really weird, unexplainable stuff. I mean, it really does, including video that they've captured that I share on the tour. Mm-hmm. But I do the seance portion of it in there, and I bring up that specific spirit, the one that's in that building, to see if we can have a answer to the question. Because ultimately, when you look at the history of that building, the ghost story doesn't make sense with it. But then all of this stuff keeps happening. So what is going on? So it's almost more like a seance to figure out the mystery of what is in that space.
Has there been any kind of scientific explanation that?
No, they've had in its previous form. It was a bar before as well. They had ghost hunters come out, and so they did the whole ghost hunter thing. But anything scientific, not that I know of. Historical, I can't find anything tied to the space in particular. Mm-hmm. For a long time, it was just the train tracks ran through it, so there was nothing there. The building wasn't built until 1928, so it's not even that old.
Oh, I say, sure.
The buildings around it are from, you know, the late 1800s, but that one's 1928, so I don't know. And I can tell you, I went in, and magicians or performers who are listening to this would probably appreciate this. You know, you should always check your space before you're performing, right? I took an EMF meter, planning on using that, you know, with a certain gimmick to make it go off.
Right.
But for whatever reason, the EMF meter goes off the charts everywhere in that building except for one specific place. And that's, I mean, like a matter of inches.
Wow, really?
Yeah, nuts, crazy off the charts. And you're not by walls or ceiling or anything.
No,
and so,
no electric wires or anything back there. That, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Right. And it's that whole building. So
that's pretty creepy.
There are things like, there's tons of stories in the video is totally unexplainable. I mean, they've got a super high bar that's, you know, probably a good 30 feet. You'd have to have a ladder to get to it easily. Mm-hmm. And they have an old copper pot still up there that's behind bottles and cans. That thing came flying off the top of the bar and landed in the ice well. It couldn't have, you know, if it would have fallen, it would have fallen at the
straight
back
down.
Edge of the bar. It went all the way to the front of the bar, didn't knock down any bottles or any cans, and it's all on video. And
really?
It's totally unexplainable.
Yeah.
So there's weird stuff like that.
That still happens.
Yeah, that happens. Yeah. This was just recently. It was security camera footage. They weren't open yet. Mm-hmm. But one of the employees was there and heard the crash and went up front and went,
how did
the hell is
up
this?
Here? Yeah.
And they went and looked at the security footage.
And so there was nobody there around.
No, there's no one there at all. That's why that's how I got the video.
Yeah.
They gave me the security footage.
Sure. Yeah. And so when you go around then also, do you have things that intentionally will try to scare the tourists?
No, I don't. And I tell them that right from the beginning, that this is not like an episode of Scooby-Doo. No one's going to jump out and say, boo. I said, if it does happen and you enjoyed it, I'll take total credit for it. But otherwise, no, I don't do any of that. No, I really try to appeal to both skeptics and believers on the tour.
Sure.
So I want to avoid getting too over the top with it, and mm-hmm. even the seance work and the you know, the mentalism that I do, it's not put on like, hey, let me show you some tricks or anything, mm-hmm. because I get a lot of believers, and I want to continue to reinforce their belief. I'll put it
sure.
that way.
Yeah, well, that's what I always say when Jamie and I start our seances, for those who believe, no explanation is necessary. For those who don't, no explanation will suffice.
Right.
Because people, I've always believed, bring in their own set of belief systems, whether they do or don't, or might just be inquisitive.
Absolutely.
And they're all fine. You
Absolutely.
Know, and you're not going to change whatever their ideas are, but just be aware that the person next to you may have a different set of belief than what system of what yours is, you know, and to kind of go with that. The reason I was asking about that is because I, again, have been on some tours. My wife and I and boys were in one, I want to say, was it in Dublin, Ireland, I think, that in which that somebody jumped out. You know, they were hiding like behind a trash can or something. Scared the heck out of my wife. I mean,
Now, I will say that the fun things that have happened, and these I did not set up. At one point, we were around the back of a building, and it's pretty dark on the backside, and there are the stairs that go down underground to the basement. And I'm pointing out that these are the steps that this particular man would have taken right before he killed himself. And it's a true story. And perhaps that's the spirit that haunts it. As I'm saying that, a breeze blows up and a plastic bag is in there and blows out and people just flipped out. So yeah, I couldn't have planned that. And then another one, I was telling a story about how there are photographs I share with a black cat, and every picture with a black cat, there's an orb. And that night, the person in the photos swears she did not see a black cat or orbs or anything else. And as I'm telling that story, a black cat ran through the middle of our group. So I have had a few of those fun things. And on Halloween night 2 years ago, for whatever reason, I don't know, I guess a transformer blew or something, but the whole district was dark, like completely dark.
No power whatsoever.
No power whatsoever. So all the bars closed. Everyone was gone. I couldn't have had a better tour. You're doing a ghost tour in a completely empty town with no lights. It was great.
You just have a flashlight? You kind of...
I always have flashlights with me. Yeah. And so, and we stay on the sidewalks. So it's, you know, we're not getting into dicey areas as far as walking. It's well-maintained sidewalks.
Right.
So, yeah.
Right. And how long is the tour?
It's about 2 hours.
Okay.
It's when it's in season, it's 2 hours on the dot. I want to, you know, and because you do, I often do them back to back. Yeah. Yeah. In season, when it's real busy, I'll do two a night.
Like what times? 9 to 11?
Eight to 10, and then 10:30 to 12:30. Yeah. Yep. And, you know, the late nights are a little harder. And this year I am going to move those up, because the thing I have not thought about the past 2 years, I don't know why I forget, when I start the tours, daylight savings time has, you know, is still in effect. So you need to be 8 o'clock to be really dark.
Yeah.
But then it changes partway through. And so I need to bump those up to 7 so that I can get done a little earlier and have more people on the later one. But you know, last year was the first year I did the Booze and Brews thing, and I only did it one night a week, and every one of those sold out. So
how many people typically? 20?
25 is where I cap. Yeah. And all of those just, they sold out. So I'm going to do those two nights a week this year. I'll do those Wednesdays, Thursdays, the regular tours Friday and Saturday. And then as it gets closer to the holiday, I'll start adding more days.
You would have more people who would want to have that experience a little bit buzzed, you know, and they're walking also. So it's not like that they're having to drive around or you're not busing them or whatever. So it'd be easier, I would think, just to stop and have a beer here and there and kind of go along. It's kind of like a pub crawl, basically, with stories in between.
It is. And the two places we stop have stories associated with them. So we start, or I start, by telling the story of the place and the spirit who resides there, what people have experienced or what have you, and then I go into the performance piece.
Yeah.
So they get, you know, a good, you know, it's not a ton of time, but 20 minutes or so, and then we're on to the next spot.
So you do, you say a performance piece, there are things along the way that you would stop and actually perform something?
Just on those Booze and Brews tours. On the standard one, I only do one routine, and it involves 5 items that are from Argenta's past, the area we're in. And I say that one of those is reportedly haunted. And, you know, just use the bag and hold my one item till the end and drop it in. And then I've got my EMF meter. It's as simple as having a magnet stuck to the back on the battery. And when I get to that person, I just slide the magnet up and sets off the EMF meter. But I can immediately palm off the magnet, hand the EMF meter out. People can look at all the stuff. I typically put the EMF meter away immediately, but sometimes people want to see it because I don't want them messing with the going, hey, it's not working for me now.
Well, that's why we would use a PK ring. It's this way that it, whenever did you change hands with it, now it's working, you know, when it's laying on top of there. But those kinds of things, I think, add to the experience. Certainly that's what Jamie Salinas and I do with the seance then as well. And likewise, like you said, you want to know beforehand what the place is going to be like. And that's exactly what we did once that we found the right place that had all these haunted stories and everything about it. And we had arranged with the bar that they would allow us to come and do that with them, that they had, allowed us to go upstairs and, you know, whatever equipment we had, and we checked out all these things, and we did hear and find some things. And, you know, I'm glad that we had done that before, because it also gave us some stories that we can talk about during the context or the show itself.
Well, on the very first Booze and Brews that I did, I've already told the story ahead of time through use of one of the routines I do, just the bare bones basic about people see this ghost on the steps at this bar. And the very first night of the tour, I'm upstairs because I'm doing my setup and I'm wondering where my crowd is. The bar is downstairs. So they're getting their drinks and we'll come up and no one's up there. And I look down and a woman had fallen down the stairs and was being carried out on a stretcher.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where the ghost is always seen. So I couldn't. Yeah. No. People talked about that. They went on social media and talked about it. So things like that have happened that help reinforce the story.
It does. See, the bar where we have been doing our seances haven't really had anything like that happen in years. But some time ago, particularly in this time, whenever that everybody has their phones and social media is so big, nothing like that has happened. But this has happened in the past because this place, supposedly that there were some prostitutes who had worked in this bar area and there was a narrow staircase. And so once, I guess, some lady had tripped and fallen or something, and she swears, I guess to this day, apparently, that she was pushed. She felt some ethereal hand on her shoulder, you know, give her a push. And we were saying, well, that would have been perhaps the madam or one of the prostitutes who was working the area. She didn't like to have any competition. So we tell the ladies, you know, as everyone, as they're leaving, you know, to watch a staircase and watch you walking down so you don't, you know, have anything like that happen. So we kind of reinforce those kinds of stories. But the fact that you still got that kind of thing happening along that line reminds me that Richard Wiseman out of England has a book, and I'm trying to remember the name of this, Paranormality or something like that. It's not right. But anyhow, in one of the chapters, he talks about where that he had gone down to the docks in London and started feeding some BS story about some peg leg sea captain or something and the spirit of this guy, you know, haunting the area. And he kept coming back for a couple of weeks and reinforcing the story and telling different people who are patrons seated at the bar with him, just total strangers, basically. And within about a month, it took legs of its own.
Right.
And people started embellishing on the story and everything then as well, in such that there was now this, you know, pirate of this area, you know, that they created. And so I think that it is self-perpetuating, you know, it can continue to add on like that.
Oh, I agree. And a lot of those stories are, they're old stories, but they keep growing again.
Right.
So.
Right. But the reason I was asking about what tricks, you know, that you do, that you don't present them as magic, which is completely different. There again, going back to what Jamie and I do, is we have a mix and mingle downstairs to begin with in the bar, and then say the seance will take place the second hour upstairs. So during that first hour, the first year or less that we were doing, first few weeks actually that we were doing it, I was doing magic at the bar. And, you know, then we go upstairs and do the seance, and people were kind of, I think, that they believed that it wasn't real. Because, in other words, if you can make a one change to 100 downstairs, then, you know, you can do anything upstairs. So I changed that completely. So it had a different story to it with a bizarre twist that was still a magic trick, but had a different presentation, such that instead of laughing or applauding, they'd go, huh, kind of a thing. You know what I'm talking about?
Right.
And so then when they went upstairs, it's like, okay, well, maybe we do believe this kind of thing could happen.
Right.
You know, 'cause he's proven this right in front of our eyes, you know?
Right. Well, that's consistent with my marketing anyway. The public part of my website, if you look at it, it doesn't say magic on it anywhere.
Mm.
So
it shouldn't. Yeah.
Yeah. It's mind reading and storytelling. That's how I market myself. That's what's on my business cards. That's what it says on the website. So, even if people look me up, I mean, obviously, if people really start to think about it, they're probably going to figure out it's a trick, right? But maybe not.
Yeah.
But I don't want to put that in their face and say it is.
For those who believe and really go to a psychic once a week and kind of find out what their next week's going to hold for them, I mean, those people come with those beliefs that they do want to believe. And if and afterwards, they're going to be saying, you know, can I have a – have you ever had that happen? Somebody come to you and say, can I have a reading?
Oh, all the time.
Do they really?
Oh, yes. Every
well,
so
man.
part of the end of the seance routine itself, I talk about spirit slates and how those were very traditionally used. But I don't want to use slates because who uses those now? So I just use a Shaxson flap envelope and a blank piece of paper, you know, and do my switch out.
Okay.
With something pre-written, and then I put a Jesus statue on it. That's just the little kind, you know, that like magnetic that stick on your car dash.
Yeah,
But I also have a Hobbs box that Outlaw made, so it's an electromagnet in the box lid, basically.
Okay.
And at the proper time in that seance, when everyone's focused on that, Jesus goes flying. People freak out, and then the writing's on the slate, and so, or on the card. And so, that's been very convincing. And I think part of it's because it doesn't look like a bunch of props, and then people go, can I look at that?
Absolutely.
Feel free. Look at anything.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's so interesting because I will just listen. I did a tour just this past week, a week ago today, I guess. It was a private tour, and listening to the people, these were college professors. So, you know, they're very smart. They're very analytical. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And she said, you know, I think you put that EMF meter by it, and I think somehow that paper was special paper and an electric something made writing appear on the, and it's like, oh, if you only knew how easy it truly was, you know. But yeah, people, they don't think it's a magic trick though, you know. She's right. Still, they don't connect that that I'm a magician.
Sure.
Because I don't say I am ever. Right.
Years ago, I was at Magic Castle. I saw Glenn Focusing performing and doing his second sight type of routine with a mask and everything. But the point was, after he was finished, that people were lined up to the side of the stage at the Magic Castle in the palace there, asking if he can tell them about their future and their jobs and whatever. And there were certain things that he wouldn't commit himself to, like who's going to win the Super Bowl, where that he was afraid they were going to be going out and investing their fortune because this guy said that this team was going to win or whatever. So he was, you know, kind of, that was the first time I'd seen someone kind of do some cold reading, just standing there. I mean, right. They were lined up. I mean, bang, bang, bang. I mean, that, and I'm sure that from what you just said, it sounds like you have that too. How do you handle that?
Well, so if they're asking about contacting the dead, I immediately say that I can't contact anyone specifically. Mm-hmm. So I, for instance, we just did this seance, but we don't know who we contacted. No clear person comes through. I'll keep it that way on purpose. I want it to be vague, like yeah. Some spirit, but who knows what? And our question's still never answered. It's a mystery. Mm-hmm. But I do say, if they're insistent, and I have had people be insistent, like my mom died, can you please just let me know if she's okay? And what I say is, the only one that can communicate with your mom is you, because she's in here. And I'm pointing to my chest as I'm saying that she's in here.
Yeah.
And that's the only way anyone can communicate with her. Mm-hmm. So that way, I don't want to, again, if they believe that they can contact the dead or that mediums are legitimate, and I say it's all a scam or something like that, they're not going to believe me, and I've attacked their belief system.
Right.
So that's why I try to imply no one can do that, mm-hmm. just you.
Right.
And that's how I handle it. And if people, I go along a similar path with talking about the Super Bowl or what have you, that people ask about specific information, I say, if I was that good to where I could get specific concrete information, I wouldn't be doing shows. I would be a billionaire, because I would have already robbed Vegas, basically.
Right. Yeah.
So I tell them it doesn't work that way. It's weird how it comes in. You know?
Yeah.
So that's how I do
it. Subject to interpretation, and you interpret it differently than what I would and what the next person sitting next to you would or whatever.
Right.
And so, yeah, you can't say yes or no that this is going to be the answer to who's going to win this or that or the right. numbers to pick, et cetera. But it's more subject to interpretation, because you could even tell them, I guess, that as I am telling you what I am feeling and hearing, that you're interpreting this differently than what the person sitting next to you is interpreting.
Right.
Perfect example. This has been many years ago, and I've told this story before, but I had done something. Oh, golly, I was traveling with my boss, and we got into a hotel late. And as we were checking in, it was like, I don't know, 11 o'clock at night or something. And he said, hey, you know, that this guy's a magician. I hate when they do that.
Right.
And so, of course, you know, show her something. So
right.
I do an invisible deck. I had, and I remember this like it was yesterday, you know. And so I said, name a card. She said, four of clubs. And I said, okay, well, clubs means you're a very social person and that you enjoy being with friends and family. And because a club would obviously imply that you like to join and be a part of groups like that. And the four would tell me that you like to travel, that you have some travel plans, you know, soon. That's generally it. I mean, I went into a little bit more detail than that. And then I fanned out the deck and I said, in the card that's upside down inside here is the four clubs.
Right.
Which was really what I was trying to get to.
Right.
It's like, okay, that's the denouement, you know, so the climax of the trick. And she said, yeah, I don't care about that, but how'd you know that I'm going to be going to England in 6 months with my cousin Judy?
Right. Yeah, absolutely.
The way she interpreted what I said was completely different.
Right.
Well, not different, but you know, she's you know, trying to hang that jacket on a nail that I'm giving her.
Right.
You know, basically.
Yeah, absolutely. No, and people I've found are way more interested. Yeah, readings or that kind of information. I remember somewhere reading a quote that the most important person in any room is you. And, mm-hmm. you know, applying to each and every individual. And that's the thing. You talk to somebody about them and Well, now you're paying attention to them. They are the most important person.
You know, that actually, Paul, goes to a very good point, not just in seances or storytelling and like that, but magic in general and performing in general, I should say, yeah. in which that you want to try to point out people and to when you look at them. I had learned many years ago from Bob Fitch, who was saying that you should carry on a conversation basically with a person in the audience. Finish that right. sentence. Then when you are, then you can look to the next person and finish that sentence, because it looks like that instead of just kind of scanning the audience and as you're talking all the time, that it seems that you are engaging a person with your eyes, and it's like you're talking with them, and they kind of get the person behind them and beside them, you could be talking to them as well. So you kind of get a little right. group at a time and move over to another one. But in other words, the point is to finish your sentence. I guess the point is that they feel more special because there is no one more important than you.
Right.
You know? And so they do feel important because, hey, he's talking to me.
Right. And one of the things I like about the ghost tour so much is that I do feel like I get to make connections. You know, we're right here. We get to talk. I look people in the eye. And interestingly, I commented to some friends that while the night the lights all went out was awesome.
Yeah.
I didn't like it nearly as much because I felt disconnected because I couldn't see people really. I couldn't look them in the eye. It was too dark to really feel like you were making that connection. And that's one of the things I've loved about the tour. And I've got people now who have come on it, you know, 3 or 4 times. And
well, that was my next question. Actually, I was going to find out about whether people do return. I'm sure they yes. bring their friends back, but do they have other questions that they come back to ask, or why do they come back?
I think most of the people who come back actually were just entertained and had a good time more okay. than anything
yeah.
else.
Yeah.
You know, several of those people have come back. Obviously, I've gotten to know them now. It's a small area where we live, and yeah. most of them followed me on Facebook. And so you feel like you get a little insight into their life.
Sure.
And same, they look at my stuff. So it feels kind of like they've become friends, but I haven't really asked them about their belief systems. I think most of them are just... They were entertained and thought it was fun and wanted to come back.
Fun. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And it's a good exercise. They'll walk around, you know, have a beer, you know, and kind of be with some friends yeah. as well. So it's just a night out and different than going to a movie. It's
right.
more a little bit interactive because you can't, I guess you encourage them to ask questions.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I tell them if you have questions, just ask, please do. Because with a group of 25, I limit it to that so you don't get stragglers,
yeah.
but also so everyone can hear. I don't use any kind of amplification. I want to keep the city happy, you know,
mm-hmm.
keep the sidewalks from being, you know, crowded with people or whatever.
So people can still pass.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, people can still pass. We cross at crosswalks, all that. I have a business license, you know, do it the right way. But yeah, I want people to be able to ask questions, and by keeping the group smaller, feel like they're really part of something intimate and special, not just a big giant group.
Group of people, right.
Right.
What's been one of the more interesting questions that someone's asked?
One girl in particular got off on a whole, this was thankfully after the tour, but got off on this whole thing about Bigfoot and if I was a Bigfoot believer and if I hunted for Bigfoot and if I found evidence. And I was just thinking, what does this have to do with anything?
Yeah, that I had just talked about for the last 2 hours.
Right. But mm-hmm. I don't know. And I'm trying to think any other questions that, I mean, they usually tend to be people who have drank a little bit and they're asking more inappropriate questions, you know,
yeah.
like, do you have a naked version of this tour or yeah. something like that? So
they're trying to be funny. They're not necessarily yeah. asking a legitimate question. Because
no.
I was just wondering if they were asking, you know, the questions about your talk about the Trail of Tears. I was thinking
yeah.
about you know, Native Americans who had died, if there are, you know, some Indians who are more well known or something that
yeah, I talk about that at the very beginning of the tour, about one of the first ghosts ever seen down there. People believe could be the wife of Quatty Ross, the spirit of Quatty Ross, and she was the wife of John Ross, who was the chief of the Cherokee tribe.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I talk about those stories, and I mentioned at the very beginning that I'm an attorney too, and the reason I mentioned that, I tell them this, the reason I'm mentioning it is not to get business, though I'll take it if you have it, but the reason I mention it is to let you know throughout the tour, you're going to see that I dig for history and the truth. I said, so you're going to get a lot of history that often might contradict the stories. And we talk about her story in particular, how a man, John G. Burnett was his name, he's just a soldier, and he wrote the firsthand account of Quatty Ross and her death along the Trail of Tears in this horrible snowstorm, and how they buried her on the side of the road. And this guy was there. He witnessed it, except it's all a lie. John mm-hmm. Ross was wealthy. They bought a steamship. She died on a steamship. She didn't walk the Trail of Tears. So I look at that. I'll tell these stories and build them up and then tear them back down.
Yes.
and then look for motivations. I say, you know, why would he have written something like this? Well, at the time, the Rosses were celebrities. He has tied his name to celebrities for all of history. And there's a saying that men die two deaths, the first when they physically die and the second when everyone forgets their name. Well, he's now assured that his name will live on forever. He's made himself a ghost, so to speak, by tying his name with someone famous. So that's kind of the start of the one of the first stories on the tour.
Ah, yeah.
So I'm always looking for that motivation. Like, why would that spirit be there? Who is it? And that's that really directs the tour.
It's nice to have that tie also to talk about your professional life of what you were doing outside of what this is to give more legitimacy to that then as well.
And for a long time, I avoided in any kind of performing situation, avoided any mention of me being an attorney. And it was a friend of mine. His name is Rokas Bernatonis. He's from Lithuania. He's a magician. He's great. But Rokas said, why do you not tell people about it? And I said, I don't think it goes with what I like. It's irrelevant. And he goes, no, I think it's super interesting that you're a lawyer and you do this. So I started using it in shows, and yeah, people have responded really well to it. And I think it's because I have found that when I see someone perform, I want to know more about them. What do they do? Who are they? And I felt like maybe it was a little like, hey, look at me. I'm a lawyer. I'm so important. So I didn't want to do that.
Right.
But then I have found people have responded well. Usually people come up afterwards and they go, you're really a lawyer? And I tell them,
Yeah. Well, again, when I said it gives the legitimacy from the standpoint that about why that you're telling him. I'm not just telling you a lawyer because, hey, that just let you know it's what I also do and I'm soliciting business.
Right.
But because that you want to seek the truth.
Right.
You know, kind of a thing.
Right.
Steve Bedwell is a medical doctor trained in England. And when he was doing magic, was telling people he was a doctor and now really gives more speeches, I guess, and has found real success in the in the talking and just speaking, what's that, National Speakers Association,
right.
As someone who is a, has a medical background, but then does some magic, as opposed to a magician who happens to be a doctor. He just kind of has twisted that around and found, you know, better success. But he's entwined the two to kind of give some legitimacy to what he's doing than to science or medicine, science and medicine versus magic and mystery, I guess, you know, and how the two might, you know, tie in. So I think, you know, whatever people have as a profession, you might look at how that you can use that in your performance that actually will differentiate that and make it more of a unique selling point or USP for you that you would differentiate you from others that no one else is going to be able to have that same kind of tie for what you're going to be doing.
Right. You know? Well, and I've found that once I've mentioned that now, I get the question all the time, does the mind reading help with trial work? And I said, yeah, I think it helps with trial work. And I think trial work helps with mind reading. And of course, I don't feel like I'm deceiving anyone by that because I do look at people. I read body language. But more than anything else, after you've done a lot of trial work, it's not scary getting on a stage anymore. So it really does help, you know, my performing.
Sure, sure.
I feel very comfortable and confident on a stage. It's, you know, I love performing and I don't have that jittery nerves because, yeah, if you do a bunch of trials, everything's easy after
that.
Well,
you know Joe Crisillo, of course, Joy to See, well. And he was similarly had his own law practice and is now the mind shark and performs mentalism full time. But he also was teaching trial law in school, in college, and also talked about using, I guess, not mind reading, but basically just kind of cold reading people and the jury. And I don't know that all attorneys would do that necessarily, and they're missing a big part of, you know, reading what the jury is thinking, you know.
Oh, I agree. And so I taught a continuing legal education class that I want to get back to again that was what the stage performer can teach the trial attorney. It didn't have to do with cold reading, but it just had to do with the idea of storytelling and confidence and being comfortable, because I sat special judge as well. And so many attorneys would come in with the cases. And because I was special judge, that means they called me when I was needed, when the regular judge was there was a conflict or something like that. So I was not familiar with the case files. And attorneys would come in and just launch into their legal argument, essentially. And I had no clue what the case was about. And I would see it over and over and over again.
Wow.
And my opening line for that lecture is, they say Lady Justice is blind. She is, but she's not deaf. If you're boring, you're losing. If you don't have a story, you're losing. You need to create I said, think about all entertainment as a story, all of it, every kind, music, all of dance. It's all a story.
Sure.
Tell a story. If you can be compelling, you can win.
Yeah.
Even with bad facts, if you can be more compelling. So that was my approach to it. And I've definitely used body language and the like in court. And my own divorce, I hired an attorney to handle my divorce. And in Arkansas, it's not a no-fault state, so there has to be fault. So you have to testify as to the fault. And assuming you have a relatively, you know, benign divorce where you're not fighting, it's uncomfortable to get up there and basically just, you know, talk bad about your partner, but that's what you got to do.
Interesting.
So, you have to prove how they are so cruel that life is intolerable with them. That's basically what everybody files under. Yeah, so I'm on the stand, and my attorney, we've prepped all the stuff she wants me to go through, and I'm watching the judge, who I know because I've been in a courtroom plenty of times, but as I'm talking and telling my stories, I see the judge kind of like breathe in, you know, a big, and then just kind of exhale and drop her head.
Yeah.
And so at that point, I was like, yeah, I'm done. And my attorney was like, go ahead. I'm like, no, I'm done. She's like, you know, kind of, Paul, go on.
Yes, right.
I was like, no, I think that's all.
She's heard enough.
Yeah. And so I stepped down, and judge granted the divorce, and we walked out. And my attorney, she said, why did you stop? We talked about this. And I went, because I just watched the judge. She heard all she needed to hear. Mm-hmm. I see no point in going on. And I absolutely do watch people. I don't, obviously I'm not using like mentalism magic tricks or anything in court, but I will admit, if I'm doing a trial and I'm always very polite to my opposing counsel, but if I can use my body, I'm big. So if I can kind of stand over them and be imposing while being very polite, I like to watch their hands. And if I see shaky hands, I'm like, oh, I'm winning this trial.
I got them.
Yeah. Uh-huh. So I use a lot of that in trial work.
That could be an interesting kind of opportunity for some magicians to go in and talk with some colleges, law schools. Mm-hmm. And first of all, they have to have everything all prepared to say, hey, look, here's what I can present. Let me talk in one of your classes about how that you can body read, cold read, you know, and win cases just by watching. Your witnesses and the jury, et cetera, and the judge, like you were just talking about. In other words, that could be another, I don't know if anybody actually does that and consults for schools.
Not that I'm aware of. Law schools would have the money to make that happen. They would be the better option. There is continuing legal education. Every state in the U.S. requires attorneys to have continuing ed. Well, I'll say that. There are a few that don't.
But I know they go to conventions and everything, just as every profession would have that. So that could be a good topic, certainly, for to be a speaker at one of those events.
Right. And that's why I was doing that specific topic. And that's why I say I want to get back to that and do more of it. The real issue with it, though, is often there's not enough money there. That's, you would think there would be, but a lot of attorneys speak for free. Reason why is if you sit through continuing ed for 1 hour, you get 1 hour credit. But like in Arkansas, if you present it, you get 3 hours of credit.
Oh, okay.
So not only
everybody wants to do it.
Right. So not only do you not have to pay for your CLE, but you don't have to sit through nearly as much of it.
Yeah,
so
okay.
It's easy to get free speakers. Wow. So and big conventions, they do hire people to come in, but it's a tougher sell as far as an area that's profitable for a full-time performer who needs to make good pay.
You know, I recently had come from the IBM convention in Phoenix and was talking with John Ferrantino, who now has a seance lecture. And
he's gone to it.
And so have you?
Yeah.
Okay. To his seance?
To the seance lecture. Yeah. He presented it at Bizarre Hauntings, a convention that was last year in Gettysburg. And this year it's actually coming up in 2 weeks in Baltimore.
Okay.
And he presented, he lectured, he did the seance too. So I saw it and attended the lecture as well.
Same thing. Yeah. He did the seance as part of the lecture.
Right.
He did the first 45 minutes or something and then explained it.
That's what it was. Yes. Mm-hmm. That's what,
But the point I was going to say about this is how that in his lecture notes that he explains how to age much of the stuff to make it look authentic, like it had come from this asylum or this period of time or whatever.
Right.
And I think it's important to have those kinds of artifacts. I say that because the Jack the Ripper seance that Jamie and I have done here in Houston, he has a whistle that was a police whistle that he got on eBay from the 1800s that would have been used. He's not saying that this is one that was used, you know, in the case or whatever, but just this is a type of thing, you know, just using some artifacts. And I think it's important that you do have artifacts in a seance, just as you were talking about, like the bag, you know, where you would do that, different kinds of props that would either be or seem to be authentic.
Right.
And you develop, how do you come up with your different ideas?
Well, as far as if you're talking marketed products, those are always things that I perform with quite a while first before I decide I want to put them out there. So okay. I don't just...
That you make for yourself, you're saying.
Right. I've always made for myself and work with it and use it. And yeah, I don't create things just to sell and make money. That's right. That's not how I function with it. But often I guess I have to answer that. I have to go back to how I start with a show. And the first thing I consider with a show is, what do I want the audience to experience? What do I want them to think happened? And I started with a very broad theme. So in other words, one of my shows that I did not too terribly long ago was the idea that maybe all mentalism is done through this alternate universe called the etheric plane. So everything I did needed to reinforce the idea of the etheric plane.
Etheric plane.
Yeah, it was. Yeah, the show was even called Etheric, A-E-T-H-E-R-I-C. And that came from this book that I got that was an actual, actual is the wrong word, but a real how to do mind reading book, if that makes sense. So I read that, and I love to read books like that because I think, well, this will inform me as to how people out there think things are done. So I took that as a framework for the entire show. So then I needed to create routines that would fit within the framework of reinforcing the etheric plane. And some of the stuff isn't old. A lot of the stuff isn't old, but you know, some of it is. I did another show, and I guess this can answer specific to a prop, another show that I ran for a year weekly. And that was all the idea. I was playing with the idea of a seance without actually conjuring the dead, going back to that quote I said about when a man dies. Right. So I said, by telling the stories of these people, we're bringing their ghost here with us. So it wasn't a seance, but it was a creepy, definitely a bizarre magic show. And I looked for interesting stories, like unusual stories about deaths. And so then I needed to create props around it. So one in particular is called Fallen Angels, and it's about a fire that happened in New York at an orphanage. And it's, I'm trying to remember, I think it's a Larry Becker idea. I'm almost positive, but it's, I think it was called Will the Cards Match? And you would spell out,
right.
Well, I wanted to do that routine, but obviously I don't do anything with cars. It doesn't fit with what I do. So I used pictures of these children who had, some of those children who had died in the fire, and funeral cards. And so that way I could, and it's, I think it's really strong and a powerful routine, but that's how I came up with it. I'm looking for ways to bring these spirits back. And it's kind of my full circle routine. It sounds like something really dark, but I say that one of those children actually didn't die. She took that opportunity to escape, to get away. Thankfully for me, because that was my grandmother, and she's this one, and this is where I got these things. I think that's the other issue too that comes about. I try to look for reality. I don't know if that's the right word. Look for a true background or history,
right,
to routines, something that can withstand scrutiny. And I think the one question with bizarre, at least the one I've been, that I get over and over and I need to account for, is where did you get this stuff? So I always like having some kind of an explanation for where this stuff came from. That's not too fantastic, you know, like if you've got, you can't claim that you have the actual something from Jack the Ripper. Like, where'd you get that? Really? You know,
you're really pushing the boundaries, I think, at some point, right, of people's believability, I guess.
Right.
On the other hand, you do need to know enough history so when people do ask you questions that you can answer legitimately with the right answer. Because if they go back and they Google it or whatever and say, that wasn't right, you know, he absolutely told me such and such or whatever. It's like if you start talking about Houdini, after the show, people are going to ask you about him because you mentioned his name.
Right.
Well, you need to know, have some working knowledge, you know, I've read a book or two, you know, and the same. That's why I was asking you earlier if people ask you questions. But it sounds like that you are introducing them on the ghost tour to legends and stories that are pretty much unknown and arcane,
yes,
to the general public. So
yes,
they don't know what questions really to ask you, as opposed to, I mean, they may know about the Trail of Tears, certainly,
right,
but not a lot of the details or the names of the people, etc.
No.
So again, they can't really bring in and ask a legitimate question thinking, well, I know the answer. answer to this, and I'm just going to test him and see if he really knows, right. You know, how Houdini died, for an example, or whatever right. it might be, you know, that in this case. But so I would, yeah, I think there again, earlier you were saying it's important to go in and use the EMF meters and do these kinds of things beforehand. Likewise, that if you are going to be doing a seance on your own or any kind of a ghost tour or whatever else, to actually have enough knowledge to be able to answer any legitimate question that someone can answer, because
right.
if you are putting yourself out there as the expert, you know, basically.
Yeah.
And so you need to have done your homework.
I totally agree. Completely agree. And yeah, most of the stories that the backstories for my props, a lot of them are things that people can look up. They can Google it, but it's not mm-hmm. going to be something they're familiar with.
Yeah.
You know, people aren't familiar with this fire in Albany that happened in 1920, you know, I mean,
yeah.
they're just not.
Right.
But I wanted to find, again, I like to find stories that, you know, where I've got another one that's called Outsider that deals with outsider art. And I've worked on my master's in art. I love art. I've got my minor in art, still do art, but there's a guy, Henry Darger, who created outsider art, which is an art movement that some people might be familiar with, mm-hmm. but they're probably not familiar with his story at all. And that is the background for the entire routine, using these pieces of art that he created. He didn't actually, I created them, but you know,
yeah.
they're attributed to him.
Sure.
And he's a real person and they can look it up. And so like 90% of what they hear out of my mouth, they can confirm online.
Mm-hmm.
So I love that kind of stuff.
Yeah, I think that's important. Well, the type of things that you make and market, I guess you don't see yourself as a competitor to like Outlaw Effects.
Well, Outlaw's out of business now.
They did?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, I haven't used them. I guess that's why I haven't bought anything in a long time from them.
Yeah. Well, if you did, you probably still hadn't gotten it. But yeah, they've been out of business for a while, but most of their products are available through Vic at Gemini Artifacts. He's taken over most of the production of the stuff from Outlaw, using a lot of the same builders for Outlaw, like me.
Okay.
I made stuff for Outlaw as well.
Oh, you did?
So,
okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, this is one that's here in the U.S. There's one in England, too.
Isn't yeah, there? That's Lebanon Circle, and
Lebanon.
That's Dan Baines. And
yes.
So,
he's still around.
Yeah, he's got my stuff as well.
Okay.
Those are the only two outlets for my stuff, aside from my books are through Murphy's, and then I've got two products that are through Murphy's, but most of it I can't manufacture on a large enough scale or at a price point that's affordable and still pays me enough to wholesale it. So
right. How many different things
I've got 13 products and 6 books.
Okay.
So, and those, a lot of times things come and go. I have discontinued lots of products and some books too.
Yeah.
So
what book or books have been more popular?
Well, Maleficium was the first one that I wrote. And I didn't go out to write it as a book. I'm a huge believer in scripting. I've always been a big believer in scripting. And mm-hmm. I actually took those to a guy that owned a magic shop in Little Rock. And he put me in touch with Dean at Leaping Lizards. And I sent him it wasn't even a manuscript. It was my collection of routines. And
yeah.
he was like, yes, we want to publish this. And so I fell kind of backwards into writing a book.
Uh-huh.
But that one's done well. It's still through Murphy's. Leaping Lizards has gone out of business, but I was smart enough on the front end to do a contract that said all rights revert to me if they go out of business. So it's still being
nice
published and distributed. And then I have another one called Embryos that's through Murphy's as well, and that's done really well. It's 3 full shows, and it's everything from the concept and how to come up with your concepts and walks through performing the shows. It has links to video performance so people can actually see the routines and performance, but marketing, the just everything.
Mm-hmm.
So those two have been my best sellers by
and
far.
Where do people, where can they go online to?
Anywhere, really. Those two are through Murphy's, so any magic shop. But paulprater.com is where they can get all of my products. And I will point out that if people are going there, magicians, there's a 4 performers tab in the menu bar. That's where you need to go because it's password protected. That way the general public doesn't get to the
okay
password, and they'll know. I can tell. I don't care. People on your podcast are fine. The password's Ted for Theodore Animan.
Yeah,
but that's the hint. That's
what was
there.
Animan's first name? Kind of a thing.
It's Theodore. Yeah, that's what it says. The short version of Animan's first name.
Okay, gotcha.
Yeah, 3-letter hint, 3-letter word.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's it. And it's just to keep the general public from,
of course,
you know, because as I say, I perform these products. I use them in my shows. And I don't mm-hmm. want somebody to come to a show, hit my website, and then right. go, oh, wait, it was just a trick. Because, again, I don't use the word magic.
Right.
So I don't want that association.
And that's Paul Prater, P-R-A-T-E-R.
Right, .com. Yeah.
Yeah, you know, along that line, it's interesting when I was talking with Banachek about it. Some years after we started putting out a lot of his products, that he kind of wished he would have stuck with Steve Shaw for a while, kind of like Phil Goldstein did.
Right.
So this way that people weren't looking up Max Maven's tricks and for his books and everything, you know, then too, that, because he was saying that he was doing the college circuit and doing the psychokinetic pin that would drop, and people would talk with him afterwards and say, well, yeah, we've already had a performer who'd come through and done that. Well, that was my trick, you know, and so, but other people are doing my stuff. And, but you know, when you go, that's part of the downside, I guess. Once you do become popular, you have something that is good that everybody has been doing, but they can go out, you know, and Google, falling pin under Banachek or something, and they can find it. Oh, that's available for sale.
Right.
You know,
well, most of my, I have kind of a big division in what I do. I have my bizarre, spooky, creepy stuff that I really do perform a lot. And I love to just point that out because people say, oh, bizarre is not marketable. Yeah, it is. I even do school shows that are straight bizarre shows.
Really? And not just during the Halloween season?
No, I do them year round.
Year round. Okay.
But I also do corporate work. And so that, you know, I don't use those products in the corporate show. It's very much a mentalism show with a tiny hint of bizarre. You know, the tiniest, because corporate, you know, a lot of times they don't want that. You know, they don't want to offend anyone.
Good point.
And so
I think college should be the same way. Very PC.
Yeah,
very
nowadays probably so. Mm-hmm. And I'm hoping to hit that market. I just got an agent, and that's NACA is one of the things we're going to hit. So hopefully we'll see. But yeah, that show, people really wouldn't. There's nothing. I think it's pretty Google proof, to be honest, that show. It's a lot of it's old techniques, things people are familiar with, but a lot of it's my twist on it. So it's not going to be, oh, we saw that guy do that last week.
Right. So. Your lectures are mostly on mentalism and bizarre.
Mentalism and bizarre. The one thing about the lectures that I really do, though, hit on and focus on is I want people to walk away with a lot of, like, I can do this, or I can at least put this idea into use tomorrow. Hopefully they don't just go out and perform something tomorrow. Sure. But I share a lot of really practical, like, here's something you can do with envelopes for nothing that is the same as what this Peak Wallet that costs $60 would do.
Yeah.
So I try to give them really concrete things that they can walk away with. It's definitely not a demo of products. I tell people that, go look at my products on break, look at my website, whatever. If you have questions, let me know, but I'm not going to demo 90% of this.
Right.
I don't.
And most of your stuff, it sounds like, also is low tech type of thing. So it's not a lot of, promistic type of stuff where it's a,
the only thing I ever use electronic is that box I was talking about, which came from Outlaw. And a perfect example of why I hate using electronics. I was doing a seance and had my girlfriend helping me. And this was the first time she had been to it or really seen me perform, I'm pretty sure. And the finale is that Jesus flying, you know, it's a pretty strong thing. And we hit the sound cue, you know, like the verbal cue.
Right.
And nothing's happening. And thankfully, I've still got the, you know, the spirit slate deal in the envelope to save me from having zero at the end, you know. But Jesus never moves. And afterwards, I went up and she's like, I'm so sorry. I swear I was present. I don't know what was happening. Well, I checked my batteries out, but not the battery in the remote. The remote was dead.
Okay.
Not the box. So I don't like using electronics if I can avoid it, and mostly I do.
Yeah, Jamie and I had decided many years ago that although there are some really cool things using a lot of electronics, and there are a few things that we do, but sometimes things go wrong. But you do have to have some sort of a backup so that you can't be left with that egg on your face. I mean, if the spirit is there or is supposed to come and they're expecting it, then and you build up to that, you know, that it really, you know, should happen. There was a thing we were using that was breaking a glass. And for some reason, I think it wasn't wound properly, or something happened. It didn't break. But we had another thing in which that there was, by me pulling a thread, there was some noise happened in the back of the room that still freaked out people. You know, that was supposed to be just kind of a climax, you know, after the glass broke, you know. But since that didn't happen, still, you know, it was kind of spooky, but not the ending we wanted. But you still have to have something, you know.
That's why I did the little spirit slate idea in case, in case with electronics. I always have a backup.
Always
just
have
in
an
case.
Out and a backup. Right. Exactly right. Well, listen, as we start to wrap up over here, the name of my podcast is called The Magic Word. So my question then is, what do you have as your philosophy of life? What's your
of
phrase?
Life as a whole?
Yeah, yeah. Well, why do you wake up? What do you do? What's what drives you?
Having fun. That's actually my answer when people say, what do? I say, I have fun. I don't like to define myself by my job, but I just want to wake up each day and be happy and productive each day and just have a great day. That really is it, just to have fun in life. We only get one, and I want to have fun.
I just read something along that line recently. It said, don't be busy, be productive.
Yeah. Well, that's a lot of me going out on my own. Yeah. Lots of wasted time in office jobs. And I realized how much more productive I could be on my own.
Yeah. Well, Paul, thanks very much. I'm glad that you joined us over here. A lot of really good, interesting stuff that I hadn't heard about. And hopefully that the listeners will take this to heart and also maybe think about how that they can apply that in their towns, which I think is interesting about how that you had taken this into a small suburb of a larger city and had actually found something that where they were kind of looking for you. And so it could be that wherever you might live, just make the best of wherever you are. You might find somebody or some organization in town, or perhaps you might go down to your local tourism bureau and chamber of commerce or something and see what they've got, you know, that might be haunted side of the town that you didn't know about, and explore into that. That could be great.
Yep.
Well, again, Paul, thanks very much.
Thank you. Thank you.
So for the Magic Word Podcast, that was Paul Prater. This is Scotty out. In my opinion, another fine conversation with a conjurer, and I got a lot out of that. I have not actually done any ghost tours, but I have participated, of course, in a lot of seances and other kinds of bizarre types of magic presentations and shows and things. But this may not be for everybody, but for those who are looking for something that's just a little bit different around the Halloween season that you're going to be able to present, or perhaps even in some of the off seasons that you're going to be finding something that I think everyone has an interest in, the spooky side of things. Year-round, not just around Halloween. So it might be something worth going and exploring in your hometown or somewhere nearby to see if you might be able to find a little additional income, and that way that you can also help promote yourself and your other shows then as well. So thank you again, Paul, for being my guest here this week. And again, listeners, I hope that you enjoyed this conversation and got quite a bit out of it as well. Now it's time to announce the names of the winners who had entered the contest, and we did have quite a few people. About 100 had entered this contest this week, and again, we had 12 prizes that were at stake here that we can give out, and because these are PDFs that they can be provided via email to go anywhere in the world, so there is no postage that's going to be necessary going out and being paid to ship this. So again, that this is something, thanks to Ian Kendall, that we were able then to provide. And also, I should mention library.com. That's LYBRARY, library.com, who also is responsible for agreeing to allow these PDFs to be given out as prizes as well. So, here are the names of the winners from this week's contest. Jim Jorgensen, Jeff Broderick, Ken Schwab, Steve Lancaster, Mike Mattson, Chris Sharp, Jamie O'Hara, Mark D'Souza, Jim McRae, Edward Taylor, Jim Krenz, and Tim Hannig. Congratulations to each and every one of the winners of this week's contest. We appreciate all of those who have entered the contest, and of course there could only be just so many winners, but we are going to have future contests that will be coming in coming weeks, so be sure to listen to the podcast, and that way you'll find out about these contests as they appear, and also if you subscribe to our pod letter, that way you can also keep up to date, because we always announce that to all of the readers of the pod letter that goes out then too, and of course you can subscribe to that when you go to the website at themagicwordpodcast.com. There'll be a place there where it says subscribe, or there might be a pop-up that will say subscribe to our pod letter. Either way, we look forward to you being on our subscription and distribution list. We try not to spam you. Actually, I don't at all. I just will each week kind of send out a pod letter that will let you know who's on this week, who's coming up next week, and a suggestion from the archives of someone perhaps you may have missed in the past. And of course, we'll let you know about the contests. So until next week, stay well, get booked, and be happy and have fun. This is Scotty out.